Florida is in a drought, and wildfires are springing up statewide. Widespread burn bans have been put into effect. Gina Jordan gets an update from Florida Public Radio meteorologist Andrew Wolfeck. We also hear from the state climatologist and the director of fire research at Tall Timbers.
Wildfires can be found in just about every corner of Florida right now. They're causing problems in South Georgia as well. And we can blame the drought and plenty of dry brush that's acting as kindling. So Florida is unusually dry, and the outlook suggests many more weeks of active fire conditions. So I checked in with Florida Public Radio Emergency Network meteorologist Andrew Wolfeck. He's been paying close attention to this situation. He joins me now. Andrew, what is the latest info on the wildfire numbers?
Sure. So there are more than 100 wildfires that are active that are being worked by the Florida Forest Service. They stretch all the way from the Panhandle all the way to South Florida. Some of the bigger ones are along the Clay-Putnam County line. That's called the Railroad Fire. There's a couple others in the Osceola National Forest, which is right around the I-10, I-75 interchange. The drought situation continues to worsen since the last time we talked. About a quarter of the state is in that exceptional drought status, which is the worst on that scale from 0 to 4.
So Tallahassee did get some welcome rain last weekend. It was very exciting. There was even standing water in some spots.
So this time of year, we need about an inch of rainfall just to keep up with normal. So any week we go below an inch, we're actually adding on to that drought. So basically the region from Panama City eastward towards Lake City and Live Oak along the I-10 corridor needs between 20 and 30 inches of rain above normal. So take that normal amount, and we still need that normal amount, and they need to add 20 to 30 inches on that just to end the drought. We keep on saying likely the only weather system that could get rid of that's a hurricane. Hurricane Easy holds the record for producing the most rainfall across the state. That hit the Big Bend area in 1950s, and it produced over 40 inches of rain over a week.
Wow.
So if you go back and you look at Hurricane Milton produced around 16 to 18 inches over the Hillsborough area. If you look back at Irma, Irma was in the same boat, 16 to 18 inches over its span across the west coast of Florida. So even a big hurricane sometimes won't even do it because we need down 20 to 30 inches of rainfall just to end the drought, in addition to the normal precipitation that we're getting. So yeah, and we've talked about it before. You know, it's an El Nino year, so that means hurricane activity is reduced in the Atlantic basin. So whether or not there'll be a hurricane this year, you know, is still in the question. But we certainly do need a weak tropical system to help cut down on those drought deficits.
Yeah. So the end result is at this point, we do have all these wildfires. And I'm wondering if you can just walk us through what is the perfect storm for wildfire risk like we're dealing with now?
Sure. So on a day in which there'll be a lot of activity that will pop up, you're expecting winds to be gusty, you're expecting humidity values to be lower than normal, and also those drought conditions that are in place. So those are the really three main ingredients. Now, I will say they do have these burn bans in effect, right, for more than 40 counties across the state. There's 67 counties in Florida. But if you look at what's caused these wildfires recently, the Railroad Fire in Clay and Putnam counties, that was caused by a rail line, a train heading from north to south sparking. So that would not have been banned, you know, under a burn ban, right? That was just accident.
Yeah.
If you look in Southeast Georgia, where there's really large fires burning in Brantley and Wayne and Clinch counties, one of the causes was a balloon striking a power line, a party balloon striking a power line. You know, that's not included in a burn ban. You know, that's just an accident again.
Yeah.
And another one of them, it was a welding up, according to the governor's office, a welding operation. Someone was trying to weld a fence or a post or whatnot. Once again, something else that's not included in a burn ban, right? So we're seeing all these accidental causes. So anytime you have any activity outside, you need to be, you know, be careful, because anytime there's a spark involved, you know, you could be setting yourself up for a disaster.
Yeah. So we haven't had a soaking tropical system in a while. We've actually weirdly had some low humidity, and we've had these gusty winds. And my understanding too is that there's still a ton of brush, just dry brush, like from storms, just laying there waiting for something to happen to it.
Yeah, there's lots of things happening. Well, one, the swamps are just empty, according to these firefighters who are fighting these wildfires. You know, the swamps usually are full, but you know, without the rainfall, they are just empty parched. So we're seeing all that sediment at the bottom of these swamps. You have the storms that have moved through, like Helene and Milton and Debbie, you know, over the past years that have downed trees and whatnot. And also, remember, we had a very cold winter at times, these cold snaps. You remember the snowfall and the hard freezes that also killed a bunch of brush. So we have
Right.
basically three things setting up just the fuel aspect of it. So anytime you see one of these sparks happen, you know, it becomes problematic. And I don't think we've seen the worst of our fire season yet, because Florida's been really fortunate, and many of these fires have been very small in nature, right? We haven't seen these big fires. I know over the last several years, the Honey Prairie fire, the Bugaboo fire, the West Mims fire, those are all big fires that have been 100 acres or around 100,000 acres plus, and they've broken out in the Okefenokee Swamp, and then they just send smoke out for months at a time. You know, we've been really fortunate, you know, about that so far, and I don't know if our luck is gonna, you know, keep up with us, you know, because we still have a long way to go for this drought.
Yeah, I was wondering about the smoke, how bad it is in some places, because I know that can really be dangerous.
Yeah, so it's measured on the air quality index scale. It's called the AQI, and values go from zero, which is a good, which is the green category, to 500, which is the hazardous, the purple, the maroon category. So there have been days in which we've gone to the unhealthy, the yellow, the orange on their scale. It's r rather unhealthy, not in the hazardous yet, mostly along the I-10 corridor east of Tallahassee. It's all depending on where that wind is during a day. Florida, again, really fortunate. We usually get a lot of our breezes out of the south, right? That's how we get such warm temperatures. So we don't have to worry about that Georgia smoke necessarily every day. So until we get, you know, a big wildfire that's burning south of Tallahassee or west of Tallahassee, we should be in good shape. Now, that won't be every day, because occasionally we do get a northeast wind, right? And that'll drive some of that smoke from the southern Georgia wildfires our way. But it's all depending on that wind direction and where those fires are located.
Yeah, in the past, we have had issues with smoke mixing with fog, shutting down interstates, massive accidents on interstates. Do you know what the rule is with that now?
Sure. So there was a disaster several years ago. I want to say it was in 2012, maybe along I-75 outside of Gainesville. You had several deaths, about 100 vehicles involved. It was super fog that developed, and it was a mixture of the fog and smoke. And so they actually did an investigation on who was responsible for having the highway open with visibilities, you know, there were zero and whatnot. And the FHP actually took the blame in that state investigation, but it was a fire that was burning along Payne's Prairie along I-75 south of Gainesville that created this super fog. It caused visibilities to be zero. A bad crash. Turns out the highway should not have been open. There were some communication errors that they cited. But the point to your question is it varies. It's going to vary depending on where that fire is, where that smoke is coming from. Usually it's FHP that shuts it down, but the Florida Department of Transportation has a say in it as well. And even local authorities can have a say in whether, you know, or not the highway should be shut down.
Gotcha. Thanks for that. So, Andrew, you have a forecast crystal ball. Your crystal ball is going to tell us how long wildfires will be a problem in the panhandle this year.
Sure. So if there is good news, it's the Florida Panhandle that's going to end this drought first, because we'll
Ooh.
see more moisture than other parts of the state will. That's classic during an El Nino year, is where we get a lot of more precipitation on the I-10 corridor than they do down there in Central and South Florida. The bad news is I don't have a start date for that precipitation. So we're likely going to go through May. With, you know, this fire weather that's going on, we'll likely go into June. And then the question is, what happens around July 4th, America's 250th birthday. There have been some years back in 1998, is what I'm thinking, where it's been very dry. You had communities canceling their 4th of July events because of the firework issues, because that adds, in another danger. You don't want fires breaking out everywhere because of those fireworks. So hopefully we get that rain in here before then, but that's going to be the telltale sign as whether we can, get a lot of rain in here or whether or not we're on this fire danger watch.
Yeah, if our rainy season typically starts in what, mid-May, late May?
Yeah, late it typically starts in late May and it continues into early September, and that can vary tremendously depending on what's happening with the El Nino or the La Nina status. Usually during El Nino years, the wet weather pattern ends, so we're left with a drier August and a drier September. We're going into an El Nino cycle, they believe now. So if everything holds up to, average or typical values, we should begin the wet season basically on time, but then we should dry out towards the end of summer, which will have ramifications for next year's wildfire season, right? Or maybe even prolong this year's fire season, depending on how much rainfall we get. So that'll be something to watch out for as well.
As far as what kind of a hot summer Tallahassee's going to have, can you tell us if it's going to be worse than normal, maybe average?
It's hard to say because we're at this status in which the El Nino Southern Oscillation Index, otherwise known as the ENSO, is changing, right? So we're in the neutral phase now, and then that'll transition into an El Nino. Typically during El Nino, we're actually, even though you'll hear headlines across the world saying the world is warmer than average, and it absolutely is during El Nino events, believe it or not, Florida tends to be cooler during El Ninos. During our summertime. So we're not looking at those extended heat streaks. That's a benefit. The other flip side of the coin is that no El Nino is alike. So who knows whether it follows, the same pattern as previous events. The heat certainly has been with us this year. So hopefully it changes the pattern some. So we'll wait and see.
Thank you, Andrew Wolfick with Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. We appreciate you and the team. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
State climatologist David Zierden is also watching the wildfires, and he told Regan McCarthy the weather conditions are ideal for what's happening now.
You need a source of ignition and you need fuel. So we can have wildfires any year, but it's during times of drought, especially exceptional drought like we're in right now, that they're much more difficult to control. That's about where we're at right now. So, and then also just with increased population, there's many more homes and structures in that wildland urban interface, and that's where the damage can really be done.
Right. And so obviously with the drought, we're seeing very dry conditions, like all of the potential brush or kindling that we have in our area is very dry and ready to catch fire. But does the dry air also impact that, the lack of humidity?
Oh, absolutely. The days that where the wildfires can really exhibit extreme behavior is when it's very low humidity and higher winds. And those conditions really fanned the Pineland Road fire near the Okefenokee Swamp in Georgia, the railroad fire near Palatka, Florida, and Putnam and Clay counties. It was these not necessarily climate, but weather conditions that really enabled the spread of these wildfires.
What is it about the humidity that impacts that spread of wildfire or lack of humidity, I should say?
Often, once we get further into the summer and the sea breeze kicks in, it brings moister air off the Atlantic or Gulf of Mexico, which really helps calm the fires a little bit. It doesn't prevent them or anything, but they're not as volatile when you have more humid atmosphere to work with instead of this really dry atmosphere.
And so you mentioned also another factor is wind, which we've been getting a lot of here. Does wind typically go along with drought, or have we just happened to get sort of that specific wildfire mix right now?
More of the latter. April is kind of a pretty volatile month as far as weather systems go here in Florida in the southeast. And so we've had typical windy April days on some of these occasions, and that's just typical part of our climate. I don't think the drought has brought any more wind or vice versa.
I know in our area, we have burn bans in place. We're really trying to make people be cautious about potentially starting wildfires. How should we be responding, I guess, to this drought as a whole and this wildfire danger?
Be aware is the biggest message I could share. Like you say, there are burn bans in place for yard waste and or land clearing. So that's a big step. But other things like it's grilling season. If you're grilling out, make sure you have a hose nearby or you're keeping a careful watch on your grill while it's ignited. Older automobiles is a big cause of wildfire. Park them when they're hot over a dry, grassy area. It can ignite a wildfire. Just be very careful. And also, the Florida Forest Service has a whole list of things you can do to kind of fireproof your house. Clearing brush, maybe clearing trees if you need to. They have a whole list of things you can do to make your house more firewise. The worst wildfire season in memory is 1998, where the summer rains didn't start until almost July. Over 500,000 acres were burned, especially up and down the east coast of Florida from Jacksonville, Daytona Beach area. Resources were called in from all over the country to help fight these wildfires. Between the months of April, May, and June, the state of Florida only averaged 5 to 6 inches of rainfall in that three-month period. And also we had near-record high temperatures and dry conditions. So that's still a year of record. We don't want to repeat that, but that's why everyone is being very cautious and proactive across the state, including our governor, on the current situation. We are in a very significant and historical drought and lack of rainfall.
That was state climatologist David Zierden. He's based at Florida State University, and he leads the Florida Climate Center. How does the state prepare for and handle wildfire season? I posed those questions to Morgan Varner. He's director of fire research at Tall Timbers Research Station and Land Conservancy in Leon County.
Wildfires are newsworthy really wherever they occur. They are in particular in South Georgia and North Florida because this is the literal epicenter of prescribed fire on the continent and really probably in the hemisphere. More prescribed fire takes place in South Georgia and North Florida than anywhere else. Wildfires are exceedingly rare. We don't have them, you know, sort of at our doorstep quite as much. They're still a little bit of a distance away right now, but it still is relatively rare to have them here. You know, the area right around Tallahassee, it has 3 of the top 10 counties in the country for prescribed fire. And so having a wildfire is striking because we just don't see them. People see fire and they know that it's part of their, you know, their March and April Saturday mornings or Friday afternoons, but they don't see wildfires. And I think that part makes this place stand out. And it makes this time, really, you can see how anomalous it is to have fire at this time of the year.
Yeah, so the smell of smoke, oftentimes we do know that's a prescribed burn. And that's interesting that that's such a big deal in this area. Can you talk about why it's so big here and the importance of prescribed burns to our landscape?
Yeah. Well, it's two different stories. You know, we have for more than a century been a leader in prescribed fire on private lands. And those lands are, you know, between Tallahassee and Thomasville, the classical red hills of the region, where people have used fire for the last century, really focused on promoting the habitat for bobwhite quail. It's a relatively rare species that is getting rarer every day, but it's also huntable. And so we have, really the best quail hunting area in the world. And that for that species to persist and succeed, it needs frequent fire. And so on the private lands, we have a lot of prescribed fire focused on bobwhite quail habitat. And then on the south side of Tallahassee, all the way to the coast, we have a large block of public lands, the nation's number one national forest for prescribed fire, the Apalachicola. And they're burning there for just the situation right now. They're burning to reduce the potential for large wildfires. And they're also burning to protect rare and endangered species habitat. Early European settlers were using fire, and the native tribes here were using fire for tens of thousands of years to manipulate the landscape and for a lot of the same purposes that we use it for.
So at a time when we have widespread burn bans in effect because of the drought and because of these wildfires, these prescribed burns would be allowed. And tell us how that works.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a typical season for prescribed fire that most folks in the South recognize, whether you put it on your calendar or not. About 90% of burning in the South takes place in March and April, and March is the peak month. And those fires are happening then because we get very predictable cold front passage. And so we get what usually this year is certainly an exception, but we usually get a rain that dumps rain really quickly. There's cool, blustery air behind it, and it's cool and lovely, and we're all celebrating spring right after it. And that's when burning takes place because the fuels are slightly wetted. The winds are very predictable, and so burning takes place during that period. That usually extends through April, through right now. But this year, as everybody is aware, we're in a 150-year drought. Maybe it's worse now. And so we've had cold front passages. So there have been these cool mornings that we've had, but the cold front passages are so weak. There's so little moisture in the air that when that cold front comes through, it doesn't deliver precipitation. And so we've just been left with really, really dry air that strikes a landscape that's really, really dry. And so any fire, you know, a small woods fire, you know, a burn barrel or something else has a great potential to escape. And in that case, you know, causing these wildfires.
So you just said we're in a 150-year drought. I've heard numbers that are less than that, and I'd like to hear more about that. What can you tell me about what we know about why this would be a 150-year drought?
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually, like last year, we luckily didn't have major tropical storm activity, but usually we would come out of last summer, last fall, with lots of rainfall that had occurred, and we averted those disasters last year. And when we came into the winter, we started into our very traditional path of, like I mentioned earlier, the cold front passages. And they just didn't come with enough precipitation. We didn't have enough, you know, Gulf moisture or moisture in the region to be able to deliver precipitation. And so, you know, usually this sort of droughty period, you would expect a month or more later. It's unfortunate for the region because we're still in the classical prescribed burn season. And in order for us to broadly prevent wildfires and, you know, maybe just as important to people in the area to promote biodiversity in the region, we need to be able to get burns in. And it's very difficult to burn when we get our typical summer weather. We all know we're going to get some rainfall during the day. The fuels will be too wet to burn. And by the time they dry out, there's another little afternoon shower. And so it's really key that we get this period to burn. And this year is just unfortunate from that standpoint.
Yeah. What happens to ecosystems when there isn't enough prescribed burning?
Yep, it's a story that's unfortunately, you know, very familiar across, you know, major areas of the Southeast. In the Red Hills and in the Apalachicola, you get to see what these ecosystems look like with prescribed fire, with frequent burning, and that is very open. You know, our forests are really savannas and woodlands, not really, you know, classical forests, and they support a lot of great diversity. They have the species that you'd expect in a grassland and the species you'd expect in a forest. And they're on top of each other because you still have the trees and you have the grassy understory. Without frequent fire, these savannas and woodlands would start to close. Small trees would establish. They would grow to be this, you know, a classical southern thicket, like what a lot of people's backyards grow into, impenetrable. And what happens in those situations is you lose the key understory plants that are food or that are the source of pollen or nectar. And so you start to lose all the biodiversity that we all value in the region.
That's interesting. I know we've had like over 1,700 fires this year, according to the Florida Fire Service. Can you look at any of these fires in the state and say, some land management decisions could have been better in those areas to avoid this?
Yep. Prescribed fire folks don't like to Monday morning quarterback, but that is really what our private messages say to each other. When we hear about a fire in a certain area, the way our text messages blow up are definitely that manager should have done X or Y. You know, prescribed fire, you know, we like to use slogans or cliches about, you know, they prevent wildfires. What they do is they make wildfires easier to control. And if you're consuming the fuel, which is what a fire fundamentally does, it consumes the fuel. And so it starves a future fire. That's one way to attack fire indirectly. And the other is, as soon as fires are spreading, if forests and these, you know, woodlands and savannas have been frequently burned, they're really a lot easier to suppress. It's a lot easier to see where the fire is and to be able to attack it than it is if it's an impenetrable field of brush.
Yeah. How do these experts that do these kind of prescribed burns balance the need for those burns with public safety, trying to avoid smoke, that kind of thing?
Yeah, from a prescribed fire standpoint, the risk of an escape is exceedingly rare. The real public health issue is it's smoke. And I know residents in Tallahassee, I live in North Tallahassee near where a lot of burning takes place. You know, they have to suffer a brief number of days a year that are smoky. And all the computer models that we're using, all of our practices, et cetera, we're trying to dial them in as precisely as we can, putting smoke where it doesn't affect people. You know, sometimes when we have that happen in Tallahassee, it's fires farther north in South Georgia. Sometimes it is an unexpected wind shift. But really, you know, we end up with 2 or 3 days that are a little bit difficult. And so we always say that, you know, it's sort of the ounce of prevention kind of adage that prescribed fire is, it's a brief inconvenience that, you know, long term we know is going to provide all the benefits that we want and is going to prevent, you know, smoky weeks that we usually get with wildfires. You mentioned the public health aspect. Tall Timbers is, as a science organization, we don't get into trying to sell people something. But what we do try to do is provide people with information. And I think if people are concerned about, you know, what the public health impacts are, you know, we have a website that we work on with Florida Forest Service, whyprescribedfire.org. It'll have information on how you can access public health information that's factual, that's not, again, us trying to sell you something.
All right, Dr. Morgan Varner with Tall Timbers, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.